We've been, as Rabbi Tochiner had mentioned, we'd focused on Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut, for the last hour plus, and now we're going to transition. What did I say? So Yom HaZikaron. Yeah. Now we're going to transition into Yom Yerushalayim, and as Rabbi Tochiner had mentioned, it's a day that's a little, it's different than Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom HaZikaron, and it also it hasn't come yet. So hopefully, what I want to do in the next 30 minutes or 27 minutes is to just explore a little bit about the role, what Yerushalayim is, how it's a special place, and so we can have a little bit of an appreciation about that aspect of the day. And then I believe in about 30 minutes, we're going to have another shiur that's going to talk more about the actual day of Yom Yerushalayim. But we're going to start just to acknowledge also at the top of the, I'm on the source sheet, the miraculous Makom place, Jerusalem. This shiur is dedicated by Janice and Albert Kirshen, Lezecha Nishmat Tzipora Bat Shlomo, Francis Joseph, mother of Janice Kirshen and Susan Gintz, and in honor of the birthday of Ma'ayan Devorah Fried, the 29th of Iyar, of Eliza and Choni Fried, and granddaughter Janice and Albert Kirshen. Okay, so we're going to start now with the miraculous Makom, the place. So we have a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, source number one. The Mishnah tells us that this is in a series of Mishnah. They're talking about lists of things. 10 of this, 10 that, generations of this and that. It's listing all different things. And so it starts, in source number one, it starts, Asara Nisim Nasu Lavotein Bevet HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles that were performed for our fathers, for our ancestors in the temple in Jerusalem. Lo epila isha mereach besara kodesh, velo hisriach besara kodesh meolam, velo nirez zvuv vedat mitzbachayim. So a woman never miscarried because of the aroma of sacrificial meat. Two, a sacrificial meat never became spoiled. Right? You have all these, this is a massive slaughterhouse, the temple, and you had meat sitting there sometimes overnight, never spoiled, a fly was never seen in the slaughterhouse. Continuing, velo era keri lekohen gadol biyom kippurim. The high priest on Yom Kippur had a special task that he had to do, and if he were to have an emission at night, he would render him not able to perform the avoda, not able to perform the service. And the Mishnayot in Masechet Yoma talk about all the different things they would try to make sure that the kohen gadol wouldn't fall asleep. And apparently, one of the miracles was that it never happened, because if he had become impure, it would cause sort of chaos in who would do what for the service on Yom Kippur day. V'lokibuk shamim esh shel atzei ma'aracha. Rain never put out the fire of the arranged wood on the altar. Fire was constantly burning. Doesn't matter if it rained, it still continued burning. V'lo natzcha haruach et amud ha'ashan. Wind never prevailed over this pillar of smoke that rose from the altar. You had smoke going up, and the wind could be blowing this way and that way, but this smoke continued to go totally vertical. It was never blowing away. V'lo nimza psul ba'omer v'shtei alechem v'lechem b'panim. The Omer offering, the two loaves, the showbread, all these bread offerings were never found to be invalid. They're always good. Omdim tzfufim mishtachavim revachim. The supplicants at the temple would stand crowded together but would bow with ample space. It was sort of like this, the rules of geometry didn't seem to apply, that people could be cramped together when they prostrate, when they bow down, there would still be enough space between everyone. There was never a death as the result or harm that was caused by a snake or scorpion in Jerusalem. A person never said to his fellow, it is too crowded for me to lodge overnight in Jerusalem. So these are 10 miracles that the Mishnah says happened in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple in Jerusalem. Thoughts about this? Anyone think any miracle here seems not miraculous or super miraculous? Any thoughts about this Mishnah? Anyone think that if you were to think of any other miracles, like if you were to close your eyes and think of, like, imagine a miracle that would happen in Jerusalem, would these be the 10 things that you would think of? Would you think of other things? Anything here? Like, yeah, any other thoughts that you might think of, miracles? Like, Hanukkah. Oh, there you go. That's a miracle that happened in Hanukkah. And it's interesting that doesn't even get mentioned here in the Mishnah. Okay. Any other thoughts?
This forces you to think about the halakhic ramifications of the sacrificial service in the Beit HaMikdash.
Say more.
It's not about the miracles, like some miracles. It's about the day-to-day functioning of the
Mikdash. Ah, these are the big miracles were that the day-to-day functioning of the temple still happened, continued to go. I learned in yeshiva in Israel, in Yeshivat Torah Traga, the Rosh Yeshiva was Rabbi, currently is Rabbi Avishai David, formerly here, I think, in Or Chaim. And he used to say, one of the proofs, and the Israel people, those who have lived in Israel can maybe vouch for this, he said, one of the proofs of the divine support of Israel is that mail ever gets delivered. He said, like, the fact that the mail system works in Israel, that's proof that Hashem is watching over Israel, because otherwise it's like totally chaos. How mail ever gets delivered, he doesn't know. So, yeah, same thing, like, would you agree with that? Yeah, he does? Okay, there you go. So, like, the day-to-day was even working. That already is itself miraculous. Interesting idea. So the Maharal of Prague, in source number 2, discusses a little bit more about this series of miracles. And he actually says that these had to have happened. It's not possible for you to have a Beit HaMikdash that is devoid of any miracles. He says this in source number 2. He says, the first paragraph, Uperush Elu Asara Nisim Shenasu B'Mikdash, the explanation of these 10 miracles that happened in the Mikdash, V'lama Nasu Nisim B'Mikdash, and why they had to be miracles in the Mikdash at all. Yesh lecha ladat, you must know, you should know, ki iav shar shelo yiyya asara nisim b'mikdash. It would not be possible for there not to be 10 miracles in the temple. Ki me'achar she'amikdash hu kadosh, since the temple is a holy place, a sacred place, u'shmo yitbarach b'mikdash, and the God's heavenly name is there in the temple, im lo naseh bo hanisim, if there weren't miracles there, imken hayashaveh beit ha'mikdash l'shar mekamot. If there were no miracles happening in the temple, then what's to make the temple any different than any other place anywhere else? It's a place where people worship Hashem. People worship. Why is the Beit HaMikdash special in any way? He says, "Right, imken hayashaveh Beit HaMikdash shar mekamot v'davar ze iafshar." You couldn't possibly be that the Beit HaMikdash would be the same as any other place. Sheyeh Beit HaMikdash shaveh l'shar mekamot. Sharei lekach nikra mikdash. It's called a mikdash. That means it has to be special. So if there's nothing special about it, except that it's called mikdash, it doesn't mean anything. It must be there's something inherently special, inherently unique about the Beit HaMikdash. Sharei lekach nikra mikdash. That's why it's called mikdash. Shu kadosh v'nivdal min hateva. It has to be sanctified and separated, separate from nature. It has to be different. V'nei shaya kadosh lekach naseh bo asara nisim. So because it was sacred, because it was a holy place, it has to have miracles happening in it. It would not be conceivable for the Beit HaMikdash to be the Beit HaMikdash, and there wouldn't be anything special going on with it. Do you agree with that? People agree with that? People think, well, the Beit HaMikdash could be special even if there weren't miracles happening? The Maharal is saying, essentially, that by definition, a sacred place has to be infused with miracles. The Beit HaMikdash is not the Beit HaMikdash if there are no miracles there. Do people agree? No? Why not? It doesn't need miracles to support it. The fact that it exists itself is significant. This is the only place in the world where all the Jews gather. Everyone brings their korbanot. Like this is unique because of what it is. You don't need any external extra things. Okay, yeah, a thought in the back.
What does it say about us that we needed to be seen to be touched?
Yeah, would we? It's saying same thing. Like. Does that mean that we only give it value because there had to be miracles? So if there weren't miracles, we'd be like, oh, the Beit HaMikdash. It sounds like that's what he's saying. He's saying that if the temple didn't have, if the fire went out when it rained, people would be like, what type of temple is this? Not really that big of a deal. Oh, the fire keeps on burning even when it's raining. Now we see it's a special place. He's saying, what does that say about us and our connection to the place if the miracles have to happen there? Interesting thought. Other thoughts? Yeah. Saying these miracles give us reason to believe. They give us their proof. Look, there are miracles happening in Jerusalem. There are miracles happening in the temple. How could you see that? How could you walk in and never see? There are dead animals all over the place. There's blood on some days, blood up to your ankles. And there were never flies anywhere? Like, clearly, how could you not see that as a proof for God? Okay, other thoughts? Right, if the whole thing is based on miracle, it So also, it goes back to, like, what does that say about us? If we have to rely on this miracle, our faith is entirely based on external miracles and hocus pocus. Interesting thoughts. We'll touch on a lot of this in a little bit. Yeah, please.
The miracles seem kind of ordinary. There's nothing, there's no thunder or lightning. It's just kind of happen, like everyday occurrences that...
Right, like you would sort of have to be, you'd have to be looking for it to notice it, right? Like, I don't know, I can't think of the last time I was watching a bonfire and I happened to notice, was the wind blowing the smoke this way, that way? Did it smell? How badly were there flies? Like, you'd have to... This is part of the idea that we said earlier. These are just sort of like the mundane, not mundane. These are like the regular, everyday occurrence that could happen. And okay, so the high priest didn't have this happen to him. Like, that's a miracle. Like, you wouldn't even realize it unless you're looking to see. Like, wait a second. It's interesting that maybe you only see these upon a lot of reflection and thinking and observing. Then you notice them. And that's, there are miracles there even if you don't even see them. You have to look for them to see them. Other thoughts on that? So I want to come back to this conversation that we're having about this in a moment, but I want to continue with what the Maharal says in the second paragraph of source number two. In the second paragraph of source number two, he's going to spend some time addressing the specific miracles. Like, okay, so you want to say there are 10 miracles, why there are miracles, okay, we're talking discussion here about whether that's, what's the point of the miracle. But he wants to continue, why specifically these 10 miracles, right? We could think of many other miracles that maybe could have happened. So what is it about these 10 that the Mishnah is focusing and saying, these 10 miracles happened in the Beit HaMikdash and it's significant because of that? So does anyone, before looking at what the Maharal says in the second half, anyone have any thoughts about this? What might it be? Do you see anything that's sort of a string that you can put through all of these? We had an idea already a moment ago that we said that all of these are miracles that you really have to look for. Otherwise, they're just run-of-the-mill, daily types of things that when you spend time thinking about it, you realize, oh, wait, that's sort of strange. But are there any other things that you might think are related to this idea? Yeah, please.
Well, maybe you might think sacrifices were a problem because of the aroma, let's say, or because you'd say, oh, but the meat could be swelled, but then because of these miracles, it allowed the sacrifices to take on a more holy sort of...
And you could, and that actually maybe could work because you have the showbread, you have with the high priest, that would render the service no good. You have the, if people were not able to prostrate themselves fully, then they wouldn't really be able to, the service wouldn't really be able to run as it should. So, okay, it's an interesting idea. These are all related to the fact that the service can actually function correctly. Other thoughts?
Related to nature
in what way? You have the wind, you have the insects, you have the snakes, you have bread and rotting meat and flies. It's a very physical, like very earthy, natural order of things that would be interesting. Yeah, other thoughts on that? So the Maharal is going to go with that actually, I think with that idea, in the bottom of page, bottom of my page one, in source number two. He says, V'yesh lishol, one may ask, Hanisim ha'elu, shenasu b'veit ha'mikdash, so you're going to tell me, okay, so he said a whole thing that you have to have miracles. If you don't have miracles in the temple, what type of temple is it if there are no miracles? That was the first paragraph. Then he continues and he says, but okay, why these 10? You could come up with other miracles, no? So he says, Lama davke elu nisim nasu b'veit ha'mikdash. Yesh lecha ladat, you should know. Ki ha'olam hazeh olam havya vehefsed. U'veit ha'mikdash yesh lo ma'ala nivdelet min ha'olam. He says the world is a world of gain and loss, of having things and of losing things. It's a world that's dynamic and growing and shrinking and big and small, and it's constantly changing. And he says the Beit HaMikdash is a world that is nivdelet from that. It's separate and distinct from that. That's, God does not operate in a world of gain and loss. God is in an entirely different sphere of existence, different dimension. Right, ra'ui shiyu kol ma'alotav v'hanisim shenasu sham harchaka mina hefsed. So it has to be that everything, the essence of the Beit HaMikdash, has to be totally removed from any aspect of loss. There can be no loss in the Beit HaMikdash, because the Beit HaMikdash as this home, so to speak, in this world of God, it's totally in a different dimension from the world. The world normally has meat, after it's slaughtered, it's there on the ground, it starts to rot and get moldy, and bread starts to get moldy. That's a world that's normal world of loss over time. But the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, is totally separate from that. It's not like that at all. And that's why you can't have that idea. And so all of the miracles that we see in the Beit HaMikdash, all of these 10 things are all in some way separating from this hefset of loss. It starts, the first one is like the biggest thing, the fact that there was never this loss of life, and transitions, I think, to the smaller one. There was never any loss or absence of anything. The Beit HaMikdash was a world that was living, that was existing in an entirely different dimension. That there was something special about the Beit HaMikdash because it's sort of this representation, this physical manifestation in some way of Hashem, of God in this world. So God operates in a different dimension, totally separate from nature and nature's, what's the word I'm looking for? When it breaks down. So that doesn't exist in the Beit HaMikdash. So that's the way the Maharal had explained it. Thoughts on that? People like this, people don't like this, people agree with it, people don't agree with it. It's very mundane. In what way? Meaning it's mundane and that it's not mundane. Meaning the Beit HaMikdash is not mundane. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, it's there, but you have to really look. You have to really look for it. Yes, please.
I was just going to say that I think the fact that there is no loss is really a miracle. Because as we learned like in the first session with Rabbi Eitan, that's the nature of life. Like, we live and then we lose. So it is a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating idea. A part of nature is the cessation of life, and that's not happening in the Beit HaMikdash. So, interestingly, in source number 3, on the top of the second page, we have Mishnat Eretz Yisrael. It's a contemporary commentary. The Safrai family, contemporary living in Israel, have a running commentary on the entire Mishnah. And in source number 3, this Mishnat Eretz Yisrael points out that these miracles are sort of interesting. That these aren't necessarily, if you were to think of miracles, you want to say miracles in the temple, you think of like big flashes, thunder and lightning, you think of like fireworks. And he says that there's something worth noting, that the Beit HaMikdash was not like that. It says in source number 3 at the top of the page, it says, Kamur, Rishimat HaNisim Tznua Biyoter. So this list of miracles is very modest. The Mekorot Muvayim, Od Me'at Sipurei Nisim Yishim. In other places, in other sources, and among the rabbis, you'll find other discussion of other miracles that happened, but they were private miracles. Ach, HaRishima, the Mishnah, Oseket Rak B'Nisim Klalim, V'Masim Shehayom Lo Hayinu Mechanim Otam Nisim Klal. He says, the sources here, there are sources that include a few personal miracles, but this Mishnah list deals only with general miracles and deeds that today we would not call miracles at all. I don't know that that's necessarily we would call it no miracles, but like we'd say, oh, that's peculiar. We wouldn't say, well, oh my gosh, it's a miracle, there are no flies. We'd say, oh, that's interesting, there are no flies. I think that's the point that they're making here. He says, Ein lanu safek sheha himnaut hakimat malea misipurei nisim inena mikrit. He says, there is no doubt that avoidance, almost complete, of miracle stories is not accidental. This is when you look, talk about in the rabbinic literature, in Tanakh, and even in this list, you don't have 1,000 miracles of thunder and lightning and amazing people levitating and floating. You don't have those types of miracles. They're almost non-existent. He says it's not an accident. He says, Achen nafutsu sipurim al nisim b'mikdash. There are indeed stories of miracles in the temple. Aval amegama hamerkazit b'sifrut chazal, he lo lafoch et hamikdash lebank shel nisim. He says, indeed, there were stories of miracles in the temple, but the main trend in rabbinic literature is to not turn the temple into a miracle bank. They're not denying that miracles may have happened. Aval enam menofifim bo kedegel ikari shel hamikdash. Okay, there were miracles that happened, but he says the rabbis weren't trying to point to the temple as being, you know, waving the flag of miracles, that this place should be this place of miracles. Everyone goes there for the miracles. You go there, you're sick, go to the Beit HaMikdash, you'll become healed. You do this. They wanted to remove that aspect from the Mikdash, and so they characterized it in such a way that we're going to say 10 miracles, but they're miracles that are relatively mundane. There are these miracles that you'd have to actually look for them to see them. They're miracles that don't stream out to you and say, oh my gosh, this is a miracle, this is amazing. Apparently, the rabbis understood that there was something a little beneath the surface when it came to the Beit HaMikdash. That they weren't waving this flag of miracles. There was something else that was happening. There was special and unique, but you had to dig a little bit more for it. Thoughts on that? Thoughts on this idea here? I think it almost is the opposite of the way the Maharal was presenting it, that like you couldn't have a temple without miracles, of course. And I think they're saying here that, but the miracles that did happen were much more modest, they're much more hidden, they're much more under the surface, and you had to look and reflect a little bit more in order to see them. But thoughts on this and this approach? People like it, people don't like it. Yeah. Right. This is the reason for the pilgrimage to the Beit HaMikdash was not so that you could see thunder and lightning and miracles. The reason for the pilgrimage was that you can bring a korban and fulfill your religious duty there. And it's a different type of thing, right? It's not like you're going there as some sort of like idol worship thing. There's something special about the city, not because of, or the temple, not because of something that was like a physical idol that was there, but because of other aspects of it. It's a good point. Other thoughts? So I think, yeah, please.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It keeps the focus, I think, on Hashem, that you're doing the sacrifices for Hashem, other than you going for yourself to see wonderful miracles.
Nice. Again, and that goes back to the point that we were saying earlier, that like, what does it mean about us if the whole basis of our religious belief is because we had to find miracles? Like, saying, no, I'm not doing it for myself and to have this miracle. I'm doing this in the service of Hashem. So it's a beautiful, beautiful idea. So also commenting on this Mishnah is source number 4, is the commentary of the Sephorno. And I think what he has to say here is important for us to reflect upon, because I think at this point what the Sephorno is doing is taking maybe in some way a step out of just being focused on the temple. You'll see what I mean. You can tell me whether you agree with what I'm saying or not. But the Sephorno, his commentary in source number 4, says, Asara nisim nasu elav atein v'veit ha-mikdash. There were 10 miracles that happened there. Hina eila nisim nasu gab mikdash sheni. He says, by the way, you should know, these miracles happened not just during the first temple, which we could sort of imagine in our heads as being like the best time period of Jewish history. Not even also in the second temple they had these miracles. Afal pi shelo haya inyan Yisrael az b'chol ofen shalem. Even though at this point in time, second temple history, if you've ever learned any Jewish history, Second Temple time period of Judaism wasn't necessarily like the best. There was a lot of infighting. There was a lot of corruption. It wasn't a wonderful time. The Beit HaMikdash, second Beit HaMikdash, also was destroyed. Right? V'yigit she'im kol zeh. Nonetheless, even with the people not being at the level that we ought to have been, lo chadal ha'chesed ha'eloki me'asot imahem nisim menagdim l'teva b'ir kodsho be'od Beit HaMikdasho betocha. It says, even if the people weren't necessarily entirely deserving of these miracles, Hashem in his chesed continued to maintain these miracles in Jerusalem, and maintain these miracles in the Beit HaMikdash, as long as the Beit HaMikdash still stood there. And the way I understood this Sephorno, I acknowledge that he's saying the miracles still happened as long as the Beit HaMikdash was there. The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the miracles don't happen anymore. But the way I understood what the Sephorno was getting at, the way I'm choosing to extract from this Sephorno, is that there is something still significant, even if we're not living up to our best behavior, even if we're not meriting these miracles, and we're not acting in a way that we should get this miraculous treatment, there's still something special about the location. There's something special about Yerushalayim. We could be terrible. We could be lo nachonimo. We could be not behaving the way we ought to be with Hashem. And still, the city of Yerushalayim, still the Beit HaMikdash, Har Habayit, that area, still contains something special about it, something miraculous. Even if we don't deserve it, maybe even if we don't even see it. I mean, you can't really see any of these miracles if the Beit HaMikdash doesn't stand anymore, right? If there's no esh tamid on the Mizbeach, there's no daily, there's not constantly burning flame on the Mizbeach, you're never going to see that rain won't extinguish it. So on some level, I think what the Sephorno is saying is that these miracles are more linked to the place than they're linked to us. And we could be not good, but there's still something special about that place in Yerushalayim. These miracles can still happen, has the capacity for these miracles to happen, even if we're not living up to it. There's something special still about the city of Yerushalayim, about that specific place, Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, and the Beit HaMikdash. Good with that? Thoughts about that? Before I want to go to a final idea. And that's this Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin. The Gemara, this appears in a couple different places. The Gemara, Tanya, the Gemara quotes this Braita. V'kamta ve'alita l'makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha. The Torah says, right, we have an obligation to go. Kamta ve'alita, we have to get arise and go up to the place that Hashem will choose, which is Yerushalayim, which is the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara there says, this Braita says, melamed she'Beit HaMikdash gavoh mikol Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz Yisrael gavoh mikol Aretzo. So he says, look, we see from here, the Beit HaMikdash is the highest level of Israel, and Israel is the highest land of all the lands. So you have, go up to the Beit HaMikdash, which is the highest you can go. You go up to Israel, and then in Israel, you go up to the Beit HaMikdash, up to Jerusalem. You have to go to the highest level you can go. That's where he goes. Kamta ve'alita, you arise and go up. The Gemara, the Braita says, alita, you go up, tells you that you've got to go up. If you want to go to Yerushalayim, just keep on going up. If you're going up, you're going towards Yerushalayim. Geographically speaking, geologically speaking, topographically speaking, this is not actually true. We know that there are places on earth that are higher elevations than the Temple Mount, that are higher elevations than Jerusalem, than Israel. So again, the Maharal in source number 6 on this Gemara says, we're misunderstanding what we mean when we say Gavoa. He says, Eretz Yisrael gavoa mikol aratzot, Beit HaMikdash gavoa b'kol Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel is higher, the Beit HaMikdash is higher. V'zeki Eretz Yisrael kadosha mikol aratzot. This is because the land of Israel is holier than all the other lands. Beit HaMikdash kadosh mikol Eretz Yisrael. And the Beit HaMikdash is the holiest place of all of Israel. V'davar shehu kadosh elyon hu. When we say that something is sacred, we mean it's high. Not physically high, but spiritually elevated. Mipnei zeh yomar kasher holech el Eretz Yisrael shehu ola. When you go to Israel, you're making aliyah. If you were going from Everest to Israel, you'd be going down, but you'd still be going up. You'd still be making aliyah. It's because it's not about a physical, topographical, what's higher and what's lower, but it's about something spiritual. V'yoter nikra aliyah kasher holech le Beit HaMikdash. When you're going up to the Beit HaMikdash, that's even more aliyah. Shekol dvarim asher ein lahem kedusha nikra shvilim v'akidoshim nikra gvohim. Anything that's not sanctified is lower, and anything that's sanctified and sacred and holy is going up. And so the idea here that he's talking about is that whatever we talk about the physicality, I think what the Maharal's point is that whatever the physicality is, the idea about Yerushalayim is that it's a holy place, is that it's a sacred place, it's an elevated place in that respect. And so hopefully, that's already 12:30, but hopefully as we've learning a little bit about this miraculous Makom, this miraculous place of Jerusalem, we have a deeper appreciation for the miracles that took place there, that maybe are continuing to take place there, and recognizing that Jerusalem is special because of this holiness that it contains. It's elevated, not necessarily physically, but it's spiritually a very elevated place.